Hello, and welcome to Are You Karate Kidding Me?
Your resource for reviews, recaps, and items of interest from all around the Miyagi-verse. My name is Colin Kennedy.
My name is Jenny Carlson.
And we have come back to you, our dear listener, to after months and months of drought, our cup runneth over with Karate Kid and Miyagi-verse related news, and also Cobra Kai related news, most importantly.
We are here to recap Cobra Kai Season 5, Episode 3. But before that, we've got some important news from the extended Miyagi-verse.
Yes, important news from the Miyagi-verse news desk. I knew you were going to do that.
Listeners, you probably already know that the premiere date of Cobra Kai Season 6 has been announced, or I guess I should say the first of three dates, because Cobra Kai is getting a supersized send-off for its final season.
That's right. Not only are we getting a Season 6 premiere date much sooner than expected,
but let's talk for a moment about the other stuff that was already in the works before this news drop happened. New physical and digital media release of the original film, and then we've got news about the movie.
Yes.
Okay, so first of all, you're the one who knows more about the 40th anniversary release, because I think you just bought ours. Is that correct?
Yes. For the 40th anniversary in June, we're getting in a new drop of the 84 Karate Kid. And I know what you're thinking, Colin. Didn't I just buy the 4K of the Karate Kid trilogy set? Yes. But this one is slightly different. This one is newly restored from the camera negative, with HDR presentation, Dolby Atmos, the whole deal. The big things that the new release is going to have that the old release did not have are a fun retro VHS packaging. The box art is more like the original home video release back in the 80s, so that's fun. But most importantly, it's going to have additional 30 minutes of deleted scenes that have never been on any other edition, which is interesting. And in fact, I think they may be some of the scenes that got used as flashbacks in Cobra Kai. Then there's also an all-new commentary track with the Cobra Kai producers Josh Heald, John Hurwitz, and Hayden Schlossberg. I'm going to go ahead and pre-order it, so obviously you can never have too many. I'm a sucker for anything with the retro box art. It's not a steelbook, but you know what?
They
can't all be steelbooks.
No, it's great. It's going to be great. There weren't steelbooks back when these movies were coming out originally, and I think part of the look to this is as retro as possible.
No, it's super fun.
Yes.
I like it.
Yes.
I like it. Moving on.
Originally intended to coincide with the 40th anniversary, but not because of the strike and other things, the Karate Kid movie that will have Ralph and Jackie Chan is still in the pipeline. It has been pushed back to May 30th, 2025. And we have casting news, which I don't think we shared last time, but was out by then, probably. We know that Ben Wong from American Born Chinese will be in it. We know that Ming-Na Wen will be in it. So that's Mulan herself, and also
finally
vital to the Star Wars universe nowadays.
Also in Joy Luck Club with Tamlin Tomita.
Indeed. The great one.
Yes.
So many other things. Also Joshua Jackson. It's a pretty sizable cast for us to know about already at this point. So this is well on its way. And the creative team, we've got Karen Rosenfeld, who produced Twilight, Percy Jackson, written by Rob Lieber, who's done a number of kid-oriented adaptations, including my childhood favorite, Alexander the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. And it will be directed by Jonathan Entwistle, who has done properties for Netflix before. So clearly they know who their target demographic is. They have a lot of people who have a track record of success. So best of luck to them. I will see this movie. And the big question is, now that we know more about this new season we're going to talk about, will we see a tie-in between the film and the final season of Cobra Kai? The first five episodes of the show will drop on July 18th. We will get a second batch of episodes on November 28th. And then there will be a third batch of episodes. Five extra episodes for those of us used to 10-episode arcs. They will be dropping in 2025, but the premiere date is TBA.
That's right. TBA, which is very telling. It's also telling that the director of the theorized Karate Kid movie is someone who's done work for Netflix before. And also, Karate Kid's a Sony property, And as I alluded to in the previous episode, Sony is very keen in dipping their toes into cinematic universes. They've got Spider-Man all over the place with his own cinematic universe, but also dipping his toe into the larger Marvel movies. Yeah, Sony loves the multiverse. I can't imagine that they wouldn't try to connect the properties in the year 2024. So I would be surprised if they didn't, quite frankly.
They, by virtue of the fact that Ralph Macchio is in this movie with Jackie Chan, it has, you know, it is a multiverse, even if they're from the same universe.
That's what I'm saying. It's going to be connected universe no matter what. It's connected universes all the way down.
Yes.
Which is fine. I think
and that turtles all the way down. You like those turtles.
So yes, so those are the big news stories coming across our desk. Cobra Kai is dropping in not one, but two, but three parts. We've got Karate Kid movie on the horizon, possibly connected to the final season of Cobra Kai.
Our conspiracy theories will ramp up once we know that date of the third and final part of Cobra Kai.
And a home video release of Karate Kid.
Yes, which we will be ordering. I just wanted to, before we dip into the recap, just say I've seen a lot of negative comments about the movie and stoking a sense of competition between the movie and Cobra Kai. Like, the movie can do it at once, but I'm going to be watching Cobra Kai. I'm going to be watching all of it because I also love Jackie Chan, and of course I adore Ralph Macchio.
Yeah, we have to.
Well, of course we have to. We are contractually bound. It's in the Miyagi-verse, so thus we do items of interest from all around the Miyagi-verse. But so that's nothing that surprises me. But I admit, I shouldn't have been, but I was surprised by comments from people who were like, I'm not going to watch the final season of Cobra Kai because this is a stunt. A supersized season is a stunt. Or this is just trying to milk something, a dopey show, like that was fun because it was stupid. Number one, Cobra Kai was never stupid. Cobra Kai played at being a silly kid show, but was actually a very deep and well-written series.
Mm-hmm.
It's an incredible value proposition for Netflix, who scooped it up after YouTube flarfed on the whole deal.
Uh-huh.
And they've only seen good things. It's the opposite of Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Even though it's also, that's an equally supersized show. I think, I'm surprised. I don't know. Are you surprised at this? Because people are going to complain no matter what you do.
People are going to complain no matter what. I think, quite frankly, I think the fact that the show has gone this far is a sign of what a success it's been for Netflix. And here's why. I'm not going to name names, but we do know people who have written for Netflix shows before.
We do.
And
they know who they are.
Right. And what they told me was that the way Netflix regards these things is that they give you a max of 3 seasons.
Yes.
Unless you are a wildly popular show like a Stranger Things, right?
Yeah.
And I think Cobra Kai skirted around that rule because they had already had 2 seasons.
Three.
They had 2 seasons on YouTube and a third one paid for and ready to go by YouTube.
That's right, and Sony. That
Netflix came in and scooped up.
Yep.
Right? And then Netflix paid for another 3 seasons on top of that using their own dime, right?
On Sony's. But yes, I know, I'm with you. It's just different than if it had been done from within Netflix because they greenlight shows and then kill them much faster. But Cobra Kai came in a proven thing so they could give it their max treatment. Yes.
I think the point I'm trying to get at is the fact that Netflix ponied up for an additional 3 seasons and has decided to make the 3rd season a jumbo size season for whatever reason. The math says that Cobra Kai was a huge hit for Netflix and they're dedicated to sending them out right. And in addition to that, I think this all points to them wanting to dovetail it into the Karate Kid movie plus whatever other Karate Kid adjacent properties they want to do down the line.
Yeah.
It's the dream. It's 6 seasons and a movie, basically.
Yeah. Ralph gets the movie for sure. And the deal is that Cobra Kai is equally Johnny Lawrence's show as Daniel LaRusso and maybe a little more Johnny Lawrence's show.
Oh, no. Quite frankly, it was originally conceived an inverse of the Karate Kid as like the Johnny Lawrence experience. And then as it's grown, it's become like this massive ensemble cast.
So I, for everyone's skepticism, and I have a little bit more to say about that, then we really have to get to our recap. But what I want to say is that I have faith that this creative team behind Cobra Kai knows how to successfully conclude the Johnny-verse within the Miyagi-verse. Any bridge they build to the film, or any way they set Ralph up for success in his character work, I believe that will be true to whatever Ralph does in the movie will be as true as possible to what they have done in Cobra Kai. And if there are more characters from Cobra Kai in that film, all the better.
I think that's sound reasoning. I think I could see a happy ending for Johnny, and then credits, and then mid-credit, post-credit scene, there's a knock at the door at the LaRusso manse, and it's Jackie Chan. It seems, it writes itself. Oh,
I don't know. I think that, we'll have to talk about that if it happens. But here's the thing I want to say. One of the things I want to say is that people come up to me because they know we have this show, like people in real life, and say, they're going to end it soon, right? They're going to end Cobra Kai soon. And I'm like, why? And they, and these are people who love the show. It's like we're also scarred by television that milked its show beyond its potential, that this is going to happen to Cobra Kai. And I'm like, what shows are currently spread so thin that you wish they'd be put out of their misery? Number one, because that's not how streaming works. That's not how our ecosystem works. And number two, this is a fun show that is continuing to be great. What's going on, folks?
I think that's part of it. I think it's just the general sorry state of the entertainment industry and maybe the world in general right now, where it's just studios are getting shut down, budgets are getting cut, projects are getting shelved.
Yeah.
Like, it's not great news across the board. And I think as these entertainment companies keep trying to chase bigger and bigger profits, they're ignoring these smaller mid-sized projects that can do great things. I think that is the thing that Cobra Kai has really excelled at, is that it feels like a bigger show than it probably is on paper. It came in with a very simple yet compelling idea, which is like, what if we recontextualize Karate Kid from Johnny's perspective? Great idea. Love it. Sold in the room. And it did sell in the room, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that they've been able to take this concept this far is amazing and wonderful and should be celebrated, as you said.
Yeah.
So I don't know who these negative people are. I think we should be looking at the fact that they've gotten extra episodes out of this season as a victory lap. I think the whole season's going to be a victory lap, but I think the fact that we've got bonus episodes and a finale event on top of it all as a victory lap, and I think
it would be unrepentingly badass.
I think the only cynical take I can think of out of all this is this idea that Netflix tinkers with every now and then, where it's not enough that they drop all the episodes at once like they used to, right? They have to now split a season in two. And now with Cobra Kai, they're splitting a season in three. And yeah, right?
to be fair, I remember when they split, I think they split both Mad Men and Breaking Bad on AMC. And I was mad about that back in the TV years when it was all happening on TV.
During the quote unquote golden age.
Yeah. And that was one thing. But this is something else, because this show was potentially hobbled by a strike.
Yeah.
And the fact that it is now an opportunity to give us more content, especially as these kids rapidly become stars, twist my arm, I'm going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And if they can manage to stick the landing with some kind of tie-in that makes sense, then all congrats. I guess my two cents on this is ultimately, there are reasons to clutch pearls about things in streaming entertainment, right? Mm-hmm. There are bad studio decisions, there's bad storytelling, there's jerks in the industry, right, and exploitation. And that didn't go away when the strikes were resolved, right? Let's enjoy this show, folks. We've made it this far. Those of us who are here in 2018, we've had nothing but fun for all this time on balance. So let's just see it home.
Sounds good to me. Shall we get into it?
Let's do it.
All right, let's jump in with Cobra Kai, Season 5, Episode 3, Playing with Fire.
Playing with Fire.
Open on the Encino Oaks Country Club.
We see Daniel, Chosen, Louis, and Anoush walking in. They're dressed like they've just been golfing, and it appears that Chosen kicked Louis and Anoush's asses at golf, because Anoush is telling Louis, you can't trash talk a karate assassin, and Louis apologizes profusely.
Chosen here is accused of being a golf hustler. Chosen chooses to take it personally, but it turns out, what? We're pranking on Louis and Anoush.
This guy.
I'm joking.
So Chosen is like Daniel's pet? He's just following him around? Anyway,
Daniel... it's more like he's Man Friday.
Wow. Okay. Daniel bellies up to the bar and is going to order everybody drinks, but then Terry pops up from behind and asks Daniel how he hit on the course. Daniel retorts, how's your sensei search going? And Terry tells Daniel that sabotaging the dojo isn't a smart move. Some would call it a casus belli.
Now, for us not up on our Latin, what is that?
That is a reason for war, isn't it? A case for war. There's probably a direct translation that I'm forgetting.
Okay, my Latin's a little rusty.
I only made it to Latin 4.
Oh, that's 4 more Latins than I made it to.
I'm sorry. Chosen walks up to help defend Daniel. Terry says they may have friends, but not as many as he does. So he's giving them a chance to stand down. So yeah, Terry is intimidating Daniel, who responds that Miyagi-Do will never back down.
No, they won't back down. They will stand their ground. Because they won't back down.
This is California, right? Tom Petty randomly plays.
Hey, baby. There ain't no easy way out.
Look out, you don't want to get dinged by copyright infringement.
That's already happened. Because anyway, we're just that good.
Daniel says this is his backyard, and he's not the one who needs to go. And Terry adds that if Daniel continues down this path, nothing in his life will be the same again.
Exactly. Daniel runs afoul of Terry. Terry gives Daniel a tempting offer. Stand down and no retaliation. But guess what?
You're playing with fire, Danny boy. And I am gasoline. Boom.
Terry then puts their drinks on his tab in response. So who's the loser now?
Terry gets the sweetest revenge possible. He pays for their drinks.
As Terry leaves, Anoush asks what that giant Bond villain wanted. And while Louis and Anoush bicker, Daniel and Chosen give each other knowing looks.
But stop clocks are right twice a day, and Louis and Anoush know just how to play this. They go and order a round of the most expensive drinks in the house.
Looks like the real fight's only just begun. Cut to Casa de Miggy, where a newly returned Miguel has made breakfast for Carmen and Rosa as a part of an apology tour.
Miguel has made breakfast poorly.
And Miguel tells Carmen that he's never doing something like that again. He apologizes, and Carmen apologizes too. She says she's sorry that she lied about how she left Miguel's dad.
Yeah, Yaya is overjoyed that Miggy has returned from his Mexican side quest. Carmen wants to be mad at Miguel, but she just can't.
Now, Johnny arrives after cleaning up the graffiti on his van, saying it should be illegal to deface someone else's property. This from the guy who spray-painted a giant dick on Daniel LaRusso's face. And Carmen replies, it is. And Johnny looks a little surprised. Nice. Carmen asks Johnny if things are okay with him and Robbie.
And Johnny reveals that the ride home from Mexico was awkward with both Miggy and Robbie in tow.
Miguel says that he may need to make an apology to Sam too. And at that moment, Carmen jumps up and runs to the bathroom to throw up, and everyone looks confused.
And Yaya makes a knowing look while Johnny is clueless.
And there we have it, the first very obvious clue that Carmen just might be pregnant. Pregnancy air horn, that's the direct inverse of the virgin alarm, right?
That's right.
Cut to the LaRusso manse, where Sam's lounging on the couch when Anthony rolls in and accuses her of eating all the Uncrustables. She calls foul, because there are still two in the box.
Anthony comes downstairs looking distraught. Sam, still in her bad girl era, taunts Anthony for getting pwned at Fortnite. Anthony is having Cobra Kai trouble. Anthony bemoans his lack of karate prowess.
Sam asks if the problem is the kid he poured milk on, and Anthony responds, no, they didn't pour milk on him. They used a bag of milk that popped when you pulled the locker door open, and now generations of fans and a few in-world characters can rest easy knowing exactly how the little bullies pulled it off.
Yeah, apparently there was a bag of milk in the locker, and the mechanism that popped the bag as the door opened. Pretty clever, for all the good it does him.
Sam says that if she doesn't hear about karate for the rest of the summer, it'll still be too soon.
That's right, and Anthony notes that Sam is acting weird because another one of her boyfriends ran away.
Holy exposition, Batman. But lest we forget, Sam's been dealing with some stuff.
Some stuff.
Sam tells her phone to text Moon and Yaz about getting brunch so she can get out of the house.
Meanwhile, over at Miyagi-Do, out in the backyard, Daniel is psyched that he and Chosen are getting under Terry's skin. Chosen is bemoaning the lack of bedding in the guest bedroom.
Yeah, Chosen's back is hurting thanks to the couch in the guest room. Daniel says they used to have a bed in there, but it pretty much got destroyed when Cobra Kai broke into their house. What a year they're having!
What a week I'm having!
Daniel explains that Cobra Kai ruined the bed way back in Cobra Kai 310, December 19th. What happened? Did Eli soak it?
I hear how you're saying it, and I don't like it.
Daniel reminds Chosen that Terry's going to call upon old friends, and Chosen responds, "Then we call on old friends first." And then he asks, "Do you know any old friends of Silver's?"
Who's left? Does Daniel know any old friends of Terry Silver, even? Any bad boys of karate we should know about, perhaps?
The camera pans in on Daniel as a montage unfolds to a new theme because he does know an old friend of Terry Silver, Mike fucking Barnes!
Representing the Cobra Kai, the challenger, Mike Barnes!
Mike Barnes.
Mike Barnes, furniture king.
Furniture cocaine. I run it with my wife. I'm so sorry for the things that I said back in the day.
Mr. Silver, you just bought yourself a champion.
The things that I did.
Come on, right now! Let's go! Come on.
Karate's bad, boy. Mike Barnes.
It does not look so bad to me.
You can dream about me.
Mike fucking Barnes.
They gave Daniel the F-bomb here, and who else has gotten the F-bomb in Cobra Kai?
This season, it's Daniel is the first. Should we go make a note to go research this?
Yeah, we'll
and
go
come
in
back?
The archive. Insert archive.
Insert every time someone's dropped an F-bomb in Cobra Kai.
It's my fucking dad.
He's your friend.
He's a fucking nerd. They kicked the fucking shit out of me.
Shut the fuck up.
You guys are gonna win this whole fucking thing.
Mike fucking Barnes.
Cut to Casa de Miguel.
Johnny and Carmen are having a talk about her earlier bout of sickness in the morning.
Carmen's telling Johnny that she's a couple days late. For what? Johnny asks. Carmen, realizing that Johnny is as dim as he appears, says that she might be pregnant.
Johnny bemoans that they use protection. Carmen says protection is not always 100%. Looks like Daniel isn't the only one who can sneak an illegal kick past the referee. Hello!
Yeah, this freaks Johnny out. He doesn't know how to react. He's dropping his keys. He's breathing hard. This was not in the plan. Johnny tries to reassure her, or maybe himself, that it's a good thing. Or is it a bad thing? Carmen says not to worry about it because she hasn't taken a test. They're going to have to pee on the stick. Or says Johnny, is that still how they do this? Yeah. Apparently, Johnny didn't miss all of sex ed, just 97% of it.
Well, sex ed isn't 100% either, apparently.
Cut to Hawk's tattoo parlor, where Hawk's got new ink to reflect his hero's journey. It's covering the Reaper that he got to cover his original moon tattoo. Hawk, Pete Davidson called. He needs your advice.
Hawk is getting a Lotus to cover up the Reaper, to cover up the moon that he got for Moon in season one. Lotus? What? No bonsai tree?
Bonsai tree.
Hawk says it symbolizes a new beginning, and a lotus flower is the only option for him.
Hawk's latest cover-up has this lotus flower next to two images of a flower enclosed in a wheel, which I think is calling back the symbol on Mr. Miyagi's Tenugui as well as the wheel technique that Daniel teaches. And Dimitri's with Hawk. Also, so is Miguel.
Dimitri notes that Miguel, who has been sulking in the corner, is looking forlorn. Dimitri notes that he doesn't normally interact with Robbie without a John Wick-style fight breaking out.
The fucking nobody?
That fucking nobody is John Wick.
John wasn't the boogeyman. He was the one you sent to kill the fucking boogeyman.
I still can't see it because of what happens to his tiny furry friend.
It's the inciting incident in the whole movie.
It's fair.
I guess I'm going to have to make a special cut of John Wick just for you.
Fair enough. But then what does he lose to move him to action?
I think it could have been anything.
Maybe it could be a sled.
Maybe it's a sled.
Okay, so the guys ask Miguel if the trip with Robbie got to him, but Miguel said that for Johnny's sake, he's trying not to let anything happen between him and Robbie.
That's when Miguel gets a text from Sam. Talk tonight, it says. Dimitri says that's code for, we should break up.
And they both look worried on his behalf. Dimitri insists that Miguel is in deep shit. That's a technical term. He offers to send up a trial balloon for more information. Can't wait to see you tonight. How are you?
Dimitri insists on sending a message back saying something like, "Can't wait. How are you?" Cut to the other side of the conversation at brunch with Sam, Moon, and Yaz.
Yaz has the same perspective as Dimitri, while Moon is Moon about it. Yaz is saying desperate but cute. They're getting brunch together. And as if we needed further evidence that Yaz and Dimitri are on the level, she adds that he knows he's in deep shit. Sam wants to respond to Miguel, but Yaz tells her that less is more. Yaz grabs the phone and types something saying, "Keep it short and sweet."
Yaz says, "Keep it short, not sweet, and totally emojiless."
AKA, "I'm okay," Yaz texts. Sam wants to add an emoji. Moon says yes. Yaz votes it down.
Back at the tattoo parlor.
Moon's boy Hawk bemoans, "There's not even an emoji. Miguel is in trouble." Cut to a regular-ass house somewhere in the valley, which Daniel and Chosen are observing from a car. There's gnarly rock music playing as the camera pans up to reveal someone emerging from the house.
There he is. Karate's bad boy. Mike fucking Barnes.
Yeah, he does not look so bad to me.
That's right, this isn't any house. This is the House of Barnes. Karate's bad boy, Daniel remarks. It's like they're writing the show at us at this point. As they stake out the house, Chosen says he doesn't look so tough. "This guy tried to kill me once. You don't forget something like that," Daniel says to the guy who tried to kill him once.
Yeah, except you and I, Chosen, we're good. That is awkward. Lest we forget, the series' original title was Team of Rivals. It actually wasn't. That's a book by Doris Kearns Goodwin. But in my headcanon, I can think what I want.
Indeed. You know what? Attempted murder isn't murder, is it?
Attempted murder. Do they give a Nobel Prize for attempted chemistry, do they?
And as Mike Barnes drives off,
Daniel and Chosen follow close behind in their nice Mercedes, only the best from LaRusso Auto. Cut to Mike Barnes' work. Mike pulls up at his place of business, which looks suspiciously like the juvenile detention center where Robbie was incarcerated in season 3.
Yeah, they follow Mike back to his place of business, where Mike pulls some sinister accoutrement from his car trunk.
The accoutrement that you will need. Accoutrement? What is that shit?
Daniel names all the objects that Mike is getting out of his trunk. A handsaw, which according to Chosen is good for cutting pipe, and a table saw, which Chosen adds is good for cutting bone. Okay, they look like they're doing improv scene work.
Daniel bemoans, looks like he's got some goons working for him.
The telephone is so impersonal. I prefer the hands-on touch you only get with hired goons.
Hired goons?
It's like a callback to the pilot fish that surrounded Mike Barnes in The Karate Kid Part 3, and maybe also to the fact that those guys gave off serious Goonies vibes.
Goonies never say die!
This is ridiculous. I feel like I'm babysitting, except I'm not getting paid.
Daniel's gonna go confront this situation, but he says he's gonna do exactly what Mr. Miyagi would do.
What does that mean? Go fishing?
No, avoid the fight.
Ah.
Meanwhile, at the pharmacy, Carmen and Johnny are there to request a pregnancy test. But why are they asking the pharmacist for something you can get off the shelf? Is a pregnancy test like Plan B in California?
What can I do for you, my dear?
I need the Plan B pill.
The Plan B pill? Oh, you're 17. I'm sorry, but I decline to offer you the Plan B pill. Have a nice day.
At this big pharmacy, Johnny and Carmen are there to buy a baker's dozen pregnancy tests for their bun in the oven.
Johnny adds, talking to the pharmacist, he's going to need a refund for his tiger glove by Achilles condoms because they don't work. The pharmacist says there's no way they were purchased at a real pharmacy.
Johnny says only the best pregnancy tests for his lady. Johnny bemoans that he wasn't ready for Robbie, but Johnny is disgusted at the sight of a tired dad over in the corner of the pharmacy.
Yeah, Johnny's still a mess. He tells Carmen he wasn't ready with Robbie. He doesn't want to be that guy again. And Carmen tries to reassure him. She says she was scared with Miguel, too. He was a surprise. And the music swells as Johnny sees a dad bouncing a baby in a sling. But instead of making a leap forward, Johnny says he thinks he might get sick.
Carmen says she's getting nervous just being near Johnny. And she wants some space. Johnny needs some time to learn to not be that guy again.
Carmen's over it. She tells Johnny he can think about how to not make the same mistakes twice.
Cut to
the spa. It's a spa day.
Spa day. Yes, it's a spa day where Sam, during this brunch that has stretched into an eternity, has accompanied Moon and Yaz to a spa for an impromptu self-actualization pod time.
The gals are wearing robes with a faux tie-dye print. Moon wants Sam to find herself. Yaz just wants Sam to know they do facials. They're going to send Sam into a, quote,
"This is a self-actualization pod."
It looks a whole lot like a, quote,
"So like a sensory deprivation tank,"
unquote. It's about connection with your innermost self, Moon says. Sam turns her down, saying she already has nightmares about drowning in shallow bodies of water.
Politic fact equals true. That was a nightmare in what, season 3?
And Moon says ever since the tournament, Sam's been off balance. The only thing that she's going to find to the pod is herself. Like the cave on Dagobah, right? Luke finds himself in the cave on Dagobah?
I feel cold.
That place is strong. The dark side of the Force.
What's in there?
Only what you take with you.
Cut to the family jewelry store. The guys have brought Miguel to find something for Sam.
Dimitri says this is where he gets charm bracelets for Yaz.
They're trying to explain to the saleswoman what they need, and Dimitri says he left the country while she was facing the biggest karate fight of her life.
Miguel has his eyes on a little octopus for Sam. The clerk says that he's in luck. It's discounted to be only a little out of his price range rather than way out of his price range.
It's a little gold octopus pendant with some blue stones in the middle. He gravitates toward it. It calls back to Senior Octopus, the stuffed animal they won during their first not-a-date at Golf and Stuff in season 1. And even though it's reduced, it's still pretty expensive. Hawk hopes they can get one with fewer tentacles. Would that be anatomically correct?
I don't think that this show's that concerned with anatomical correctness. Just go ask Johnny. Ouch. Hello.
Wow. Meanwhile, at Mike's Furniture Barns.
At the store we're now going to call the Furniture Barns, Daniel sneaks in through the loading dock, which is something Johnny should have tried with Carmen before he got her pregnant. Whoa, hello.
Wow. This will be a runner. I'm just not sure what it is yet. Daniel's creeping in behind some boxes when he hears Mike Barnes telling someone he's, quote, "been telling them to get rid of that Italian piece of shit for years," unquote. Oh, flew in from Japan, Mike says. By the time he's finished with them, they're going to be unrecognizable.
Yeah, Daniel overhears Barnes' sinister conversation. Barnes is negotiating for 50%, as is his usual, yeah.
Yeah, Mike holds up the table saw and says he's going to start by cutting off their legs. He asks the phone person for 50% after what happened last time. It's just like the deal he cut with Silver in The Karate Kid Part 3.
I know.
And Mike's gloating that those kids are in for a big surprise as Daniel runs up behind him, grabs the phone, saying he's not going to have you or your ponytail pimp lay a finger on our kids. And Daniel goes on telling Mike that he's not going to stand for it.
Daniel says he's not going to take it. No, he's not going to take it. He's not going to take it anymore. Da-da-da-da-da.
Also a callback to a former music cue in Cobra Kai. And after a moment of utter shock, Mike recognizes Daniel.
Barnes is legitimately surprised to have his phone call interrupted by someone who is neither a crank yanker nor a jerky boy.
"I'm sorry, who is this?" says a lady's voice on the phone. "Oh, wait! They're talking about a Japanese cedar chair and a Florentine table. And now Mike only gets 40% commission. Oof." Daniel finally puts the pieces together, asking, "You work in a furniture store?" He's dumbfounded as sitcom-y box store music swells. "Daniel," Mike says, "I own the furniture store."
Bum, bum. Barnes gives Daniel the big reveal. They've been at the Furniture Barns this whole time.
Cut to Casa del Johnny. Once again, Johnny's autofill is telling us a lot about his world. No one writes Johnny and the internet better than Mateo Green.
Indeed.
Johnny clicks on a quasi-YouTube video called "Bun in the Oven. Here's your pre-arrival checklist."
Cue an entirely new kind of training montage, Johnny learning some crucial life management skills.
How to do a swaddle of Coors banquet bottles, which he drops. Then Johnny trashes all the unhealthy food in his fridge. He takes down his Beachy Bay poster, puts up a bland lighthouse landscape. He's got to get rid of mold, pests, and other hazards. And right then he sees that his couch is infested with roaches. Maybe couch roaches are a California problem, but those guys look like Texas roaches to me. And we're fumigating. But he's drinking from an open bottle of Banquet as he does it. Dude, there's some gaps he still has to fill in. And the woman's voice in the video says, "And if you think this is hard, just wait till the baby arrives." Johnny's crashed out on the floor.
Probably from the fumes.
He is spent. Cut to Mike's furniture barns. Daniel and Mike are walking past the carpets. Daniel apologizes profusely. Mike says if there's one person who doesn't owe him an apology, it's Daniel. The things I said back in the day, the things that I did.
I'd be more concerned about the things he did than the things he said, quite frankly, but go on.
Splitting hairs. Mike wanted to apologize, but he didn't want to trigger something in Daniel. He wanted to leave the past where it is, and Daniel's understanding. He says he's trying to wrap his brain around Mike Barnes' furniture salesman, and Mike says that he co-owns it with his wife. It was her father's business. He says that the tournament with Daniel almost ruined his life. He did a bunch of manual labor, and then he met his father-in-law, who taught him he could do more with his hands than fight.
Mike profusely apologizes as they walk the floor of the furniture barns. Barnes is pleased that he has a new direction in life from working with his wood, much like Johnny is learning now. Hello!
Wow, Colin will be here all night, folks. And again, as Mike is talking to Daniel, we get traces of this Miyagi model of doing things, right? Do something practical with your life and you just might kick some ass. So Mike asks Daniel about his life, because after all, he's seen Daniel's commercials where the Karate Kid chops down prices. But Daniel gets real and says things haven't been so great lately. I guess Mike Barnes missed the whole news story about the karate riot. Meanwhile, back at the spa in the sensory deprivation tank, Sam's got an 11-style view to her personal upside down. She's lying in the water when she's transported to a blank space, not Taylor Swift's kind, where people come up one by one and tell her who she's supposed to be. LaRusso 2.0, says a pushy avatar of Daniel in a headband and gi. One of the girls, say Moon and Yaz in their cheerleader costumes from season one.
You broke my heart, says a ghostly Robbie. Miguel says, you're my girlfriend, Sam. Can't you be supportive? Well, God damn it, even the upside down, Miguel can't help but be passive aggressive.
A rapidly beating drum sounds as the room and avatars start to spin around Sam, and Tori's voice says, I know exactly who you are, princess. Aw, man, now everything has fallen away and she sees a figure in the distance. Sam asks if it's Tori, because that's who it would have been in her nightmares, right? But no, it's a shadow Sam in a black gi.
Sam then hears this familiar voice that sounds admittedly a little like Tori at first, but it turns out it's the Cobra Kai edition Sam, which is like a normal Sam action figure, but with a black gi and slightly different makeup.
Yeah, I like the fact that the voices are mashed up the same, kind of like when Gandalf the White is emerging and his voice sounds like Saruman at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I am Gandalf the White, and I come back to you now at the turn of the tide.
Anyway, Dark Sam pulls out the scythe with a look of pure evil and lunges at Sam, who dodges. This isn't your daddy's cave fight on Dagobah. This is full-on Dark Ray and Light Ray repping the only good scene in Rise of Skywalker.
Mm.
And Sam's struggling to fend off Dark Sam with her bow staff. The fight's getting more intense.
Cobra Kai edition Sam whips out her scythe and starts stabbing at regular Sam with gleeful abandon. Sam grabs her trusty bow staff, the weapon of choice for Donatello, my favorite ninja turtle.
What Donatello used to use? This is my favorite turtle.
I like turtles.
Back in the spa, Sam sits up gasping as Moon opens the lid to the tank to tell her she had the most incredible vision. Of course Moon had the most incredible vision. She was a drop of dew glistening in the moonlight. Sam's unsettled by the whole experience.
The short version is Sam's all messed up inside.
And Mike's furniture barns.
Cut to the furniture barns, where Chosen is concerned.
Mike's outraged on Daniel's behalf. Daniel tells Mike he's hoping he can help them stop Terry.
To have this psycho invading your life, I can't imagine what that's like, Barnes says. You know what? It's just another Tuesday for Daniel.
Daniel tells Mike he's hoping he can help them stop Terry. Daniel asks Mike if he knows anything that can help them bring Terry down. Mike comes up with nothing, but he and Daniel good-naturedly joke about a rematch because no two rivals can share a scene without there being a possible rematch.
That's when Chosen busts in and the fans get a treat. A full-on Chosen Mike Barnes fracas. Fracas.
Is it fracas or fracas?
Fracas.
Fracas is
Jonathan Fracas.
Jonathan Fracas. That's another franchise.
Jonathan Livingston Fracas.
Jonathan Livingston Fracas. Daniel and Mike are lined up in a fake rematch, and that's when Chosen lunges in the battle, making the fight real. After all, how could we let the opportunity pass to see two former villains spar? And now the furniture's getting wrecked as Daniel tries to break up the completely unnecessary fight between Chosen and Mike. Of course, Mike's now ready to roll.
Completely unnecessary fight, you say. Welcome to the valley, huh?
All these fight moves are very familiar. Mike's staff looks as freaked out as Daniel's looks when things happen at the dealership. Anyway, Mike's getting swings in against Chosen's dodging. Daniel pulls Chosen off Mike, only to have Daniel get thrown into a chair. And now that Daniel's hurt, Mike really starts to wail on Chosen. Daniel gets in the middle, flips them both apart, and tells them to stop. Daniel tells Chosen he didn't attack him. They're on the same side. Now Daniel's got some explaining to do. This is just a giant misunderstanding, like most of Cobra Kai, but that's what we're here for, right? And Chosen quips, if this is a misunderstanding, they'd better call the ambulance.
Because Chosen plowed through all the hired goons on his way into the furniture store.
Those are furniture store workers,
They're
Colin.
Furniture store goons.
The most important kind of goons.
Hired goons?
Cut to Casa del Johnny, where Johnny is screwing some IKEA furniture together, looks like.
Yeah, Miguel has an important question for Johnny. Miguel is concerned about the toxic chemicals Johnny's been using to clean his apartment. And while he notices the cleanup, Johnny realizes his update will tip Miguel off to Carmen's situation.
Miguel walks in to talk to Johnny, immediately overwhelmed by the scent of paint thinner, pesticide, Johnny's not sure. Miguel wants to know what's up, but Johnny tells him not to worry about it. Yeah, that would be a lot. Johnny offers Miguel some milk because now he has a whole fridge full of it. And Miguel tells Johnny that he and Sam are having issues and he needs more advice than Hawk and Dimitri can provide. Yeah, Johnny takes the opportunity to wrongly diss Dimitri's luck with ladies.
Miguel has girl questions for Johnny. He asks Johnny how to fix up his situation with Sam. Johnny's too high on paint thinner to provide his usual glib response and winds up delivering what actually is some kind of sage wisdom instead.
We all get shit wrong sometimes, but if you own up to your mistakes, you always have a shot at making things right. I'll just be honest with her.
Then he shoots straight when it comes to Miguel. He tells him to tell Sam the truth and own up to his mistakes.
That's actually some really good advice.
Yeah, just when things are batshit off the rails, the writers know when to remind us what makes this show tick. And really, the relationship at the heart of this show is Johnny and Miguel. There's so much good faith in this relationship that they can't help but hit that sweet spot every time they have a heart-to-heart.
Speaking of off the rails, back to the furniture barns.
Yeah, in a showroom furniture model, Daniel's apologizing profusely while Chosen and Mike hold ice packs.
While the three lads sit down to ice their joints, Barnes gives Daniel and Chosen the info dump on a shady lawyer that Terry employed cheaply and conveniently off-screen in Karate Kid 3.
Mike tells Daniel the only thing he can think of is that back in the day, Terry had a shady off-the-books attorney who did Barnes's contract. And Barnes reminds us that he made them put in writing their promise to give him 50% of Cobra Kai. Daniel asks Mike if he still has that contract, and he doesn't. But he might be able to dig up that attorney's name. Meanwhile, Chosen's getting comfy on the tufted blue suede. They ask how much it costs, and even though Mike upcharges Chosen, they take that bad boy home with them. No, not that bad boy. The sofa.
Yeah, it does not look so bad to me.
Out on the loading area, Mike's henchmen, goons, employees, are wrapping up the sofa to go.
And Chosen tells them not to get blood on the couch because it's very expensive. Meanwhile, Daniel leaves a voicemail for Terry's old lawyer.
Daniel makes the call, but unfortunately, it goes to voicemail.
Nobody's home. Nobody's home.
Hi, I'm calling in regard to a former client of yours, Terry Silver.
Cut to Miyagi-Do. Sam is standing with some trepidation out by the deck when Miguel walks out to join her. We get some bass notes of Sam's theme. Miguel tells Sam that he owes her an apology and owns up for all that he did. He admits that he wasn't thinking about her or them when he haired off to Mexico like that. She tells him he doesn't need to explain. She says she was so wrapped up in the tournament that she wasn't sensitive to what Miguel was going through. She says as hard as that was, she respects him for taking the time that he needed to find himself. And Miguel looks hopeful. Unfortunately, it continues from here. Sam says now she needs the time to find herself. She says that ever since Cobra Kai opened up, everything in her life has been about karate.
PolitiFact equals true on that one.
Yeah, it's affected her relationships with everyone, her family, her friends, and Miguel, who would have just been her innocent lab partner in another universe.
Indeed, Sam and Miguel finally have this fateful meeting. Miguel shows some honesty and some vulnerability. They both apologize to each other. Sam wants to go on a break.
We were on a break!
Yeah, Sam says she needs that little break to figure out who she is outside of all the karate stuff. Miguel asks what kind of break, and that's when Sam cries and says she's not okay right now, and she doesn't think she will be until she figures this out for herself. Sam adds this doesn't mean they can't still be friends. And Miguel sees the writing on the wall and says, just not boyfriend and girlfriend. Sam replies that she doesn't know if it's even what she wants, but it's what she needs. You can't always get
what you want. If you try sometimes, you might find you get what you need.
We hope. Oh, yeah. Miguel says he understands, and he wants what's best for her always, because Miguel is a mensch. And Sam and Miguel hug, and while they both look comforted, they also both look like they're hurting. And Miguel says it doesn't mean they can't be friends. They promise they'll always be friends. And Miguel can't stand this, I don't think. He says he should get going and tells her to call him whenever.
The warm music swells as Miguel puts on a brave face and then turns and makes a sad, scrunchy face to camera.
He turns and walks off crying.
He heads out to the parking lot. Oh, but what's that in his hand? Oh, he had the octopus the entire time. And then he drops it in the walkway for anyone to conveniently find in a future episode.
Boy, no one cries like Sholomar Dueña. Like, this kid is a good actor, but also he's just good at face acting specifically.
Which is a shame that they put him in that suit in Blue Beetle where you can't see his face.
But he gets some tears in Blue Beetle, too. Cut to Casa del Johnny. Carmen arrives and discovers all the changes that Johnny has made.
Oh, that's so nice. Carmen arrives, and as he finishes his baby proofing,
including his specially adjusted headphones for listening to Metallica in the womb.
Johnny says he's even modded his headphones so that the fetus can listen to Metallica or Dokken or whatever. Hey, because if the state declares you a person, then you're old enough to rock.
Johnny says he didn't think he could be one of those lame dads, but if he's doing it with her for their kid, he'll do what it takes. He can't promise he won't screw up, but he can promise he won't run away. Well, I never worried about that with our Johnny. Carmen confesses that she couldn't wait, and she took the test.
Carmen took the test, and congratulations, it's a baby!
Well, thank God.
Exactly.
Johnny says he's ready, and she says, we're having a baby, and Johnny says, badass, in genuine delight. The show fades out as they kiss, and you think you might get an instinct.
Because all that she wants is another baby. She's gone tomorrow for it.
No, it's another scene.
Oh, never mind.
But no, it's not yet time. She does lead a lonely life.
Yeah, kinda.
Kinda. Cut to the country club.
That's right. We go back to the Encino Oaks Country Club.
We fade in to show Daniel in the steam room, attempting to relax, probably after all that karate, when he hears the playback of his own voicemail to Terry's lawyer. Terry emerges into the light of the steam room, holding the cell phone he used to play the message. I warned you, he says.
I warned you! I warned you!
Adding that he and Daniel are going to see a lot more of each other. First, I'll deal with my old friend, Terry says, and then I'll deal with you. I told you not to play with fire. He looks meaningfully at Daniel and then leaves the steam room.
Daniel's enjoying a nice steam, and rather than lock the door and turn up the heat to maximum like any other supervillain, Terry arrives to play back Daniel's voicemail and to make vague threats.
Not the only steam room intimidation scene that we have seen, right? The 2019 film Lucky Grandma.
Yes.
In which a Chinatown grandma runs afoul of the mafia.
Oh, that's true. She was also enjoying a nice steam.
When she gets some ill-gotten money and they come and give her messages in the steam room.
And of course, there are all those times James Bond has enjoyed a nice steam.
There's also, you know, the Sinister Steam Room and Evil Rising, the Finnish horror film. I looked this up thinking surely this must be a TV trope, the steam room intimidation scene. But no.
Why do I always have to get intimidated? Why can't I enjoy a nice spitz?
Exactly. But no, the closest thing they have to this on TV tropes is the sauna of death. Which luckily this is not the sauna of death.
Indeed.
Just for those of you who needed to know about tropes and bathing culture.
Yes. And we cut to the furniture barns, where we find that this was more than just a overt metaphor.
Yeah, because we see...
He was being literal.
Yes. Mike is emerging from his car to see Agora Fine Furnishings, a.k.a. Mike's Furniture Barns, engulfed in flames.
The furniture barns is no more.
And now, we get that end snake.
Oh, God.
And those who are watching with us will see that this episode was dedicated to the late Jeff Kay. He was an assistant director on Cobra Kai.
There you go.
He died in 2021.
I turn to you now, in our moment of need, and I ask you, hey, what'd you think of this episode?
Oh, what a great episode. I mean, it's always a risk when you do some reunions that could count as fan service. You got Mike Barnes talking to Daniel, Mike Barnes v. Chosen v. Daniel, and it's delightful. It's also leavened with some real-world gravitas of Johnny and Carmen finding out in a way that only they could, that they're having a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a little gift with all kinds of relatable feelings and over-the-top situations. And I think it's tightly done. There's no line that doesn't make sense or serve the plot. And also the gut punch of Sam and Miguel, man.
Yeah.
So it's got a little bit of everything, and it shows everybody firing on all thrusters.
Yeah. Now I can't help but think of the Sam Elliott monologue at the end of The Big Lebowski, where he's, and although here it'd be like, looks like Daniel's gotten himself into a real pickle. And it's too bad about the furniture barns. But then again, there's a little Cobra Kai on the way.
Wow.
That gives you a little bit of hope.
Wow. Dang.
Yeah. So anyway, impressions aside, no, I think this is always a great part of the season, this kind of upswing where we're ratcheting up the tension. We're getting, I think the show is really firing on all cylinders in, as you said, balancing the fan service-y moments and making them work for the narrative rather than just be there to be there.
Yeah.
Which is something a weaker show might play with. Nostalgia is a heavy spice. You got to really be careful how you utilize it. And I think Cobra Kai does it just right.
Yeah. No, I could joke that this whole episode is an Easter egg or that the whole season is an Easter egg, but the whole show is an Easter egg, right? Mm-hmm. And when your own creative team owns that it is fanfic, mm-hmm. Give yourself permission to do all these things and all these matchups and mashups, it really leaves you with more creative freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And this just shows the delicate work that they've put into creating a fully realized world with real characters who are connected to legacy characters, the young cast, but who have their own concerns and their own issues that speak to the timeless themes of The Karate Kid originally. And yet we could still play with these legacy characters and have them make us see new perspectives. It's really cool. And also, I have to say, shout out to the Johnny and Carmen baby plot,
mm-hmm.
which a lot of people saw coming. I thought what could happen, but maybe not this soon.
That's what I was going to say as well. Like, the pacing of this season is a little peculiar compared to other shows. Indeed. But then again, it works in the show's favor, right? It's like this Miguel subplot, which they could have easily let that run throughout the entire season, but then Miguel wouldn't have been in the valley with all the other characters, right?
Yep.
So they gave that subplot the space it needed to take up the first couple of episodes. But now Miguel's back in the mix, and all the characters are back in play, right? And with the pregnancy, is that something any other show could have held till much later in the season for a much bigger reveal? But guess what? That's not the biggest reveal that's going to happen this season. If this is a big reveal now, then that should tell you as a viewer that, holy moly, there must be some really crazy stuff coming down the pike.
For sure.
And not to spoil the next episode, but the way that they handle Johnny's journey emotionally with this plays really an interesting role in how he reacts to the news of all these developments.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's going on is that the creative team behind the show knows the ending of the show. They've always known where they were going, but they know how they're going to get there. And so they're just, without hesitation, putting all the pieces into place to set us up for something bigger than the valley, bigger than the themes we've been dealing with or the challenges that the characters have faced. And
bigger than the valley? What could be bigger than the valley?
I know, it's true, because the valley is a microcosm for the entire universe.
It's true.
Yes. But they're taking these big swings, and by the end of the season, it'll be like, well, of course they're having a baby. Of course this is happening. And you have to hand it to the actors, too, for selling this in a way that they take it so seriously that even though Johnny's kind of a big dope who uses condoms that must be an incredible Easter egg that I haven't been able to find on the internet yet, which I thank God for incognito browsing, I completely believe and am touched by their journey. And also the fact that Johnny has a fridge full of milk now instead of Coors Banquet is adorable, considering the fact that the baby won't even arrive for at least 7 or 8 months.
Indeed.
So good luck, everybody. But yeah, I'm so proud of Sam and Miguel. I just want to say that scene was really good.
That's true. That is also something that Cobra Kai does really well, which is it plays with your expectations. And it's something I love to see. They zig when you think they're going to zag. Any other teen show would be like, they would handle it badly, or one of them would handle it badly.
Yes.
And it would just become a source of conflict and drama for the rest of the season. And it will, but the way that they handled it sets a really good example for any teenagers who actually may be watching it and actually may be trying to draw some sort of life inspiration out of this show, which I think the show is aware of. Yeah.
It's a touchstone for people in real situations. And that scene between Sam and Miguel seemed much more true to life. I think we've all been through our share of youthful angst, but sometimes the angstiest situations are the one in which you have to be a grown-up and be kind, even though it breaks your heart. And especially after all these characters have been through, both individually and in their relationship, there was no way they were going to stay angry at each other like they were earlier in the season. That's just not where this show needs to see them or where they should be. So way to go, again, to everyone working on that they showed them being their best selves in one of their worst moments.
Indeed.
I just also, I don't know, I feel like we're covering our usual topics without naming them. Do you want to talk about MVPs or Easter eggs? Or do you have anything else to say generally about the arc of this episode?
I was going to say, Jenny, what's your favorite Easter egg?
My favorite Easter egg was probably the moment that Johnny realized that graffiti is illegal.
Indeed.
So it's a Cobra Kai Easter egg.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's, we've now advanced so far down the Cobra Kai rabbit hole that we're now referencing things that happen in Cobra Kai rather than things that happened purely in The Karate Kid.
What about you, Colin?
I love everything. I love all the fun stuff that they're doing with Mike Barnes. It was inevitable that we would get to Barnes eventually, but now that we're here, it's delightful. I do like the detail that Barnes is like, who would drop such a crazy contract for a teenager to get 50% of Cobra Kai for fixing a karate tournament? Like, how is that binding at all? I thought that was a fun detail. And then, of course, the idea that there's a lawyer character who was not on screen in Karate Kid 3. We never saw them. We never will see them. Will take care of them off screen.
I'm having a Mandela effect because I feel like I saw a lawyer, but I think what I'm doing is filling in a guy from another show or something, because I can see the man's face, but I guess he didn't really exist.
We might have to do a little more research. Perhaps this is a deep Easter egg of someone who might have been cast in Karate Kid 3 and then, like, they got cut out of the movie.
And uncredited.
Yeah.
Shout out to Sean Kanan, who, I think about how when they were creating the character of Johnny for Cobra Kai and Billy Zabka had to work with, what did he have of Johnny to build the character? And he knew from when they shot The Karate Kid that Johnny was a really good person inside, or that he had a really good and sweet side, because he said, "You're all right, LaRusso," at the end. And you feel that. I remember as a kid seeing Johnny be nice, and it just shook me, because bullies are bullies, right? But
your lefty shook.
Yeah, no, it did, because Billy Zabka was good even then in his first movie role. I'm not saying that I felt sorry for Johnny, like I wish he'd won that karate fight, but it made me realize that there was a person in there and that it must not be easy to be doing all this. Anyway, so what did Sean Kanan have to work with while creating the character of Mike Barnes.
Not a lot.
There is no moment where Mike Barnes really says, "You're all right, LaRusso."
No,
right?
He's not the type.
No, Sean Kanan had to completely fill in the blanks, probably working with the writers and working with the showrunners. And he does a good job.
Yeah, you see him he kind of had to walk back some of the Karate Kid 3 stuff, which, again, like Terry Silver already had to walk back a lot of that in seasons 3 and 4.
But the one thing, he does bring his negotiation skills, which is nice. That's how you're dealing with Mike Barnes, that and the martial arts.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Yes.
So, yeah, no spoilers, but this is not the last we're going to see of Barnes this season, and it's going to be fun.
Good on you, season 5.
Speaking of appearances by beloved characters, Jenny, who's your MVP for this episode?
Oh, this is difficult. This is difficult. I've already called out Sholo and his incredible face acting. And I also want to say shout out to Mary Mauser, who does a great job as good Sam and evil Sam. And also Sam dealing with her age mates, talking to Moon and Yaz, and also then breaking the news to Miguel. She's doing a lot of lifting. I feel like she actually edges Sholo out, despite the fact that Sholo's incredible face acting and crying is the emotional core of the episode. To me, that and Johnny reacting to Carmen's pregnancy, right? I'm going to give the MVP for acting to Yuji, to Chosen.
Oh, fun.
Because this man just delivers one-liner after one-liner.
It's true.
And
he's clearly having the most fun. That is for damn sure.
Yeah. Like all those lines about what the props are good for. Mm-hmm. And when he comes in and fights Barnes and policing the sofa and having a bad back. I don't watch sitcoms much anymore. Unless right. It's like Green Acres.
We watch Abbott.
We do watch Abbott. Abbott is technically a sitcom. I don't watch joke stories. Stories with a lot of jokes. But I would watch him. I would watch the Chosen sitcom because he is so funny and he's so committed.
Mm-hmm.
You have to believe a person and really means it. And I believe he really means it. And you know, the man is having a complete blast, but
you don't
think about it because you're just so busy enjoying the fact that he's chosen.
Yeah, exactly.
So I got to hand it to him because in an episode with a lot of heavy stuff,
mm-hmm.
he brings it.
Exactly.
And he also gets to fight the bad boy of karate.
Indeed.
Even though he doesn't look so bad to him. What about you? Who's your MVP?
You make a great case for Yuji / Chosen. You make a great case for Sholo / Miguel. Johnny did a lot of good work in this one.
He sure did.
Yeah, as did Carmen. But I think at the end of the day, I'm going to have to pick Sam.
Yes.
I'm going to have to pick Sam, and here's why. She's still in her bad girl era. There's something I love about this trope of the good girl gone bad. And she's also clearly going through it with a capital I. And it gives her a lot of fun little things to do. Like the opening of this episode where she's sitting on the couch eating Lunchables.
I think you mean Uncrustables.
Which is something that just seems wildly out of character for both Sam and Mary Mauser to be doing, but
yes.
Yet she's sitting there doing it, and I'm just like, that's hilarious.
Yeah. And so, who among us hasn't had a moment where we just want to sit and eat something?
Oh, we
like
all
a Lunchable.
Do it. We all do it. It's but
we do?
Okay, anyway. We'll come back to that later, but it felt like a real moment in what can be sometimes a very fantastical show. And so I really like that. And I really like everything Mary/Sam was doing in this one. So yeah, I'm going to give it to her.
Yeah, I see that. I see that as Sam channeling her Amanda realness.
Yeah, yeah.
From her mom.
Yeah.
It's really good stuff. No, I think that's great. And I think we're on the same page there. That just in terms of versatility and relatability, Sam's got it.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I think that puts everything to bed for Playing with Fire. Any other thoughts or observations before we head out?
Chosen is gasoline.
Chosen is gasoline, and he is not done igniting this show. We're only 3 episodes in, gang, and we've got plenty more coming to you down the pike. So I guess we will close it out here, but Until then, you can find us on social media at Karate Kid Pod. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Instagram.
That's right.
We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, whatever your podcatcher of choice is. We are there. Hit us up. Talk to us. Email us karatekidpod@gmail.com with questions, comments, and if it's interesting, we will definitely read it on the air. Why not?
Indeed.
So until next time with Cobra Kai Episode 4, Downward Spiral.
That's right, Downward Spiral.
I've been Colin Kanaday.
I remain Jenny Carlson.
And we'll see you around the Miyagi-verse.
See you around the Miyagi-verse. Are You Karate Kidding Me? Is hosted by Colin Kanaday and Jenny Carlson.
Intro music is by Chepo.
Cobra Kai music is by Leo Bierenberg and Zach Robinson.
Karate Kid music is by Bill Conti.
Rate our show on Apple Podcasts or your podcatcher of choice to help grow our listenership.
Email us at karatekidpod@gmail.com with questions and comments, or find us on social media.
Use the Twitter handle @karatekidpod.
This podcast is independently produced
by Gekkering Media.